Hey, Love Tribe. Before we dive into today's episode, we wanted to share with you some exciting news. We're offering our online course, Spark My Relationship, at its lowest price ever, only $100. That's nearly 60% off full price to improve your connection with your partner today. In less than 90 days, this self-paced course will help you create more passion, improve your communication, and build a stronger, more intimate connection with your partner and have fun while doing it. We've collaborated with over 15 psychologists and therapists to bring you the strategies that marriage therapists teach their clients. So join the thousands of couples who've strengthened their relationship with our online course, Spark My Relationship. This offer only lasts until Saturday, April 6th. So head on over to sparkmyrelationship.com and use the code FLASH24 at checkout to get the course for only $100. That's sparkmyrelationship.com and use the code FLASH24 at checkout.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's show, where I welcome Thais Gibson. And Thais is the founder of the Personal Development School and has a PhD in counseling. She is the creator of Integrated Attachment Theory, a body of work designed to transform painful relationship patterns to become secure and create thriving relationships. She has over 48 million views on YouTube and 300,000 followers on social media. And today, Thais and I talk about how to transform our attachment wounds and heal them towards becoming more securely attached. And Thais gives some very specific, in fact, 4 steps in order to do this with some specific exercises that her and I actually go through as if I was doing kind of a session with her, and you'll be able to follow along and answer the questions for yourself. I found it very valuable. I think you guys will too. I love this work. Attachment theory has been one of the areas that has helped me the most in my personal life and in my relationships. So if this is your first time exposed to these ideas, welcome, and it'll be great. If you know all about attachment theory, you're still going to find some new exercises and ideas that will be super helpful. If you don't know your attachment style, I encourage you to check out the link in our show notes and take a quick quiz to identify that. That'll also be super helpful, but not completely necessary in order to get the most out of this episode. You'll still find a lot of value, but do that at some point, and it'll help and encourage your partner to as well, and dive into all that goodness. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. As always, enjoy today's show. Hi, Thais. Thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here with you.
Today, we're going to talk about something that has been probably the single most powerful and valuable modality in understanding myself and my relationships, and that is attachment theory and attachment styles. And we've covered that on the show previously in multiple shows, but I just think it's so important for people to understand. So I'm excited to talk to you today about how we can heal our attachment style and work towards secure attachment. So maybe we could start by having you share with our listeners why you enjoy helping people in this particular area of self-development, and then we'll maybe touch on attachment theory slightly and talk about working towards security.
Sounds amazing. So I really got into this because I was a fearful avoidant or disorganized attachment style. You'll hear it often referred to as both names. And for me, at a really young age, I grew up in a home with a lot of chaos. And I think from a very early time, I was always walking on eggshells. I always, you know, I wanted love, I wanted connection, but then when it would get too close, I would feel afraid and I would sort of need to push it away. And so I experienced a lot of that, like, hot and cold dynamics in relationships. And on top of that, I actually struggled with opiates when I was 15 years old until about 20, 21 years old, of really regular, like almost daily use, minus, you know, these sort of spurts of periods where I couldn't get my hands on things. And I basically just grew up really suffering, to put it shortly, and had a lot of work to do and wanted there to be a better way. And I was high functioning enough that I made it to school for psychology. And I was actually in a psych class one day and somebody said to me, oh, your conscious mind can't outwill your subconscious mind. And to me, that was so profound and impactful because as somebody who was struggling at the time with addiction, I was constantly going, oh, I'm going to get clean. I'm going to get sober. I'm going to stop using. I'm going to avoid this person so I don't, you know, delete people's numbers from my phone. And then I would always find a way. And I realized that what was happening to me is that I would consciously intend those things, but subconsciously my mind wanted to numb pain, and painkillers seemed to be like something easy enough to do when you're a kid. And so, you know, growing up and going through that experience, I actually got really obsessed with learning about the subconscious mind. And my first large certification was in hypnotherapy for a year. And so I got really into learning everything about reprogramming, got really into neuroplasticity, went through and was in school for a very long time for the traditional method of psychology, but got really into like, how do we reprogram? How do we change our behaviors? So when I realized a lot of the pain I was running from was relationship pain and attachment trauma from childhood, and got really into solving for a lot of that and healing at a deeper level, it actually had a huge impact on me being able to get sober and really start a whole new fresh chapter in life. So it's been about like 14 years now. So a long time, but it was like the most meaningful, beautiful thing because it was so hard, but it was like, so I learned so much to set me up for life after that. So I was just really excited at that point, you know, to share this with others and to really dive into like, how can we change our attachment patterns? How can we change our fears, our limiting beliefs, all these different dynamics by really addressing the subconscious mind?
I love it. And it's something I personally relate to, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners, and we'll link to attachment style quizzes so that people can identify their attachment style if they haven't already. But once you do, then I got like this conscious mind idea. It's like, okay, I tend to be anxiously attached, and I'm trying to will the change through the conscious mind to undo these unconscious things. And it's really difficult. So can you share with us, with me, some of the first steps that we can take to start to unpack these unconscious programming?
Yes, great question. So I think you illustrated it so perfectly when you say, I don't want to be anxiously attached, you know, and you will, or, you know, I would have clients all the time when I was running my practice that would be like, I would put my phone in the other room, turn my phone off, tell myself I'm not going to text or call this person. I know they're not good for me, not go back to the person. And yet you find yourself going through the same patterns of behavior. And that's really illustrating the difference between the conscious mind's intentions and the subconscious mind's programming. And so that's where we have to really dig in and do the work. So the first big things, we actually created a body of work called Integrated Attachment Theory. And the whole purpose of it is to take the understanding of traditional attachment styles and actually simplify and streamline in how to leverage principles of hypnotherapy and neuroplasticity to reprogram attachment styles to become secure. It was the work I first did on myself through a lot of trial and error over a long period of time, and then proceeded to use in client practice with about 5,000 clients over almost a 10-year period, and then proceed to put online through the personal development school. And we've seen about 30,000 people come through these programs at this point, and they really do work. And so the first big piece is we have to learn to rewire our, we can call them our toxic dating stories. So we all come from different attachment trauma. It doesn't always have to be big T trauma. It can be little T trauma. And that can include things like, you know, I will always be betrayed in relationships. I will always be abandoned in relationships. I will be trapped in the wrong relationship. I will be shamed and criticized. I can't trust that I can get my needs met. So we have these different toxic stories based on basically the trauma we went through for our individual attachment style. So the anxious attachments, they're big toxic dating stories. These are our core wounds. Are I will be abandoned, not good enough, disliked, excluded, unsafe if somebody pulls away or leaves, and I am rejected or will be rejected in the future. So these are the big core stories we have to rewire. Fearful avoidance have a lot of the anxious leaning side. So they carry those same core wounds as the anxious preoccupied, but they also carry the avoidance side of the core wounds. They basically have the side of both. And the big avoidance sides are I'll be trapped, helpless, powerless, especially if I'm in the wrong relationship or have to be vulnerable. I'm weak if I open up. It is unsafe to open up. And I don't belong, and something is wrong with me at my core. Like, I am defective. And there's a lot of, if you grew up in a household where you're shamed for your vulnerability or you're emotionally neglected, you feel like, oh, there's something wrong with me. This part of me that's emotional and has emotional needs is not being connected to. And that really creates those core wounds for the dismissive avoidant. So those are big toxic dating stories. And then we have to actually leverage reprogramming. Okay. How can we change these stories is step one. And so once you've identified your stories or your core wounds based on your attachment style, what we have to do is, you know, I'm not a big believer in affirmations. I think that affirmations speak to the conscious mind. You know, research shows this. If I say, whatever you do, do not think of the pink elephant. You know, your conscious mind heard do not, but your subconscious probably pictured a pink elephant. So when we're saying, I'm good enough, I'm good enough, I'm good enough, you're only at your conscious mind, right? And we don't consciously want to have these toxic stories. We don't consciously want to have these wounds. We don't wake up saying, today I'm going to tell myself I'm not good enough all day. You know, these are subconscious programs. So we have to learn the language of the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind speaks through emotion and imagery. And if we want to change our programming there, we have to speak in those languages. Well, guess what contains emotion and imagery? Every single memory we ever have. If somebody goes back and says, oh, this is my favorite childhood memory, and they're telling about being on the playground, they smile because they're feeling the emotion of it, and they see the images of the playground in their mind's eye. So every memory is just emotion and imagery. So now that we understand this, we can just literally rewire through a process called belief reprogramming. Okay, we take our toxic beliefs, not good enough to good enough, or I'll be abandoned until I am worthy of connection. You know, we can find the exact opposite. And all we need to do to rewire neural pathways is get repetition, emotion, and imagery, which means repetitive memories. If I can come up with 10 memories per day of when I did feel good enough, I am now using my conscious mind to rewire and speak in the language of my subconscious mind. And when we get repetition, emotion, and imagery, we're actually refiring and creating new neural networks. And so this is how we actually leave our baggage behind. These old toxic dating stories that we're constantly bringing into relationships, constantly afraid of, when we say, no, I am good enough, or I am worthy of connection. 10 pieces of memory for 21 days, that's it. And this really works. So this is actually how we can recondition to not feel this way any longer. And research shows it takes 21 days to create these deep new neural networks and leave the old ones behind.
I love it. I think for the sake of, for our listeners and selfishly for myself, maybe you could walk me through a few of my memories in an exercise. Could we do that?
Absolutely. I would love that.
Yeah. Cool.
So you said you were anxiously attached?
Yes.
Okay, beautiful. So one big core wound is I will be abandoned. Another big one is not good enough. Which mm-hmm. one do you find is affecting you more on a regular basis?
Yeah, I relate to both of those, but I would say not being good enough.
Okay, yep. Beautiful. Okay, so let's take a moment, and if you can start by thinking of just something small, okay, and we can go through the different areas of life and I'll guide you through that. But if you can start by thinking of a time that you were good enough and you actually felt a sense of pride or accomplishment, just starting with career. Do you have anything that you're sort of proud of or you feel a good sense of accomplishment with your career?
Yes.
Will you tell me about it?
The first thing that comes to mind is I raced paddle boards, paddling professionally, and I won. At the time, it was the biggest race in Europe. And yeah, that was kind of the pinnacle of my career in a sense, and a time where I allowed myself to be like, okay, good job.
Yeah. Okay, love that. That's extremely powerful. And can you look at some of the hard work that went into that and the different ways that you showed up to really make sure you could put yourself in a position to succeed?
Yes, absolutely. I trained a lot.
And will you give me some details about them? So tell me what you had to do for training, for example.
Yeah. I've built my whole life around preparation. I would train 6 days a week. I was never into partying or, you know, that kind of lifestyle. And yeah, everything was built around maximizing my ability to succeed. So I was very much focused and dedicated to winning races and in that race.
I love that. So I hear that you're extremely dedicated. I hear that you are hardworking. I hear that you're consistent and have really good habits. And I hear that that's part of what's led to a whole lot of success at this sort of pinnacle where you won this huge award for paddleboarding. Do those things resonate with you so far?
Yes.
Beautiful. And what else? So that's one sort of big thing in your career. What else do you have in terms of other accomplishments that you're proud of?
Outside of career or...
Oh, just other anything else in your career? I mean, to me, I'm like, you have an amazing podcast.
Yeah.
What about that?
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I am proud of that. And as I've shared on this show, it's definitely like a passion. It's not our main project in a sense. Sarah, my ex-wife, and I both have other businesses that I'm also proud of. But yeah, I'm proud of this podcast, having done almost 450 episodes and to be able to give this information to people and get it for myself and kind of create a path for others and for myself to learn and improve on these things.
I love that. And I hear that you're always working to heal and grow and learn, which are really powerful attributes, I think.
Yes, thanks.
Beautiful. And do you have anything else in terms of other businesses? You mentioned you and your ex-wife have these other businesses. Do you have anything else that you're proud of in terms of something you've created?
Yeah. I have a stand-up paddle board surfing retreat here in Costa Rica. And yeah, I'm really proud of that and everything that led me to have it today. You know, lots of sacrifices along the way. And with COVID and lockdowns, it was very touch and go and coming out of that. And now we're finally kind of cruising and comfortable and returning business and people seem to be very satisfied. And yeah, as I'm saying these things, it's also valuable because I feel like I don't take the time to be like, hey, good job to myself.
100%. Yeah. So we gave just a couple of examples, right? Those were just like touch. And what we would do is you can go through the different areas of life to look for evidence. It is such a worthwhile exercise because your conscious mind can be like, oh, sure, I do things that are good enough and kind of pass it over. It's your subconscious that has to feel about these things. And so you might have noticed that I was asking you a couple of specifics. I asked kind of details and I asked, you know, and the more we can get specific, the more we have images in our mind. It helps sort of jar those images up. Mm-hmm. And the more that we get specific, the more we feel about it. And so we're getting more emotion and more imagery. So we went through three. And what you would do is you would go through the different areas of life. Was there anything else in career? What about around your relationships, your friendships, your family relationships, romantic relationships, like how you show up in those areas, like the characteristics, attributes you have, who you truly are, right? Not who you're trying to be, but if you're truly a caring person. We'll do one more just briefly here. If you had to say a couple of things that really describe you in terms of how you show up for people you care about, what would you say there?
Reliable, dependent, that I keep my word. I would say that those things for sure.
Beautiful. And what about caring? I get the sense you're like a very caring person for people.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to say kindness and definitely care. Yeah. I feel like I'm empathic sometimes to a fault. Trying to take on.
And do you have a way that that's ever helped you show up in a really good enough way in a relationship? How you were able to really be there for somebody or support someone in need that really landed for them?
Yeah, absolutely.
And can you give me one example just to get specific?
Yeah, like a specific example.
Yes.
From a caring standpoint, I really love, you know, when someone will mention something just kind of offhand and I don't have to work hard to do it, but I think about how I can give them that experience or a gift. And so, yeah, I have my current girlfriend mentioned these very specific type of, was it Mochi gummy snacks that you can only get, you know, imported. And she just mentioned it offhand. And then when I was in the States, I was able to get it for her. And yeah, she really like that. And I enjoy being able to do those things.
Before we continue on, we're going to take a short break to tell you about our sponsors. After a decade of hosting this podcast and talking to hundreds of experts, we know that money is one of the biggest stressors in relationships. Now, while worrying about money and anxiously awaiting payday doesn't help, Earnin actually does by putting the money you earn in your hands today. Our sponsor, Earnin, is an app that gives you access to your pay-as-you-work up to $100 a day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an additional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Many couples end up fighting about finances, especially when surprise costs arise. Earnin allows you to seamlessly deal with the unexpected trip to the vet or that splurge on date night without the added stress, letting you both focus on what really matters. Earnin is helping millions of Americans feel self-sufficient and to worry and fight less about money. All of this without debt traps, mandatory fees, or credit checks. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in relationship advice under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. That's relationship advice under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Women's health, especially PMS and perimenopause, has been one of those chronically neglected areas when it comes to research and solutions. Thankfully, we have today's sponsor, Happy Mammoth. Our sponsor, Happy Mammoth, saw that there were no effective nature-inspired solutions to these issues. So they made one, EstroControl. Relationship advice listeners can now get 15% off your entire order on happymammoth.com with our promo code IDO at checkout. EstroControl contains science-backed herbal extracts that help support hormonal health. The way EstroControl eases PMS is pretty interesting. The ingredients help support the liver, and that is where all of our hormones get processed, especially estrogen. So when estrogen isn't processed well in the liver, some women may start having PMS symptoms, like spots on the skin, cravings, and feeling low all of a sudden. EstroControl was created to help women feel like themselves throughout the whole month. EstroControl is made especially for women who are premenopausal. It's really great for perimenopause when hormones start to fluctuate and PMS becomes really rough. I personally struggle from PMS firsthand, from super discomfort to just not feeling like myself. PMS has put me through the ringer time and time again, and I know it's not just me. I've seen my relationship suffer in those times when PMS takes over. EstroControl works to relieve many of those consuming PMS symptoms, helping us regain control. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with a promo code IDO at checkout. That's happymammoth, MAMMOTH.com, and use the promo code IDO for 15% off your first order.
And so I hear thoughtfulness, I hear dedication in there, you know, so many beautiful traits. And so as you're giving, that's a beautiful example as well. As you're going through, you know, you'd go through career, relationships, you would go through, you know, all different types of relationships, friends, family, romantic. Then you would go through financial, mental, emotional, spiritual, physical areas of life. And same things, like, how do I show up naturally? Who am I already? What is my truth in these areas in ways where I've accomplished things that make me good enough or things I'm proud of or feel good about? And as you come up, I don't think you have a very hard time coming up with 10. Then all you need is the 10. And you can write new 10 ones all the time if you'd like to, but really for reprogramming, you just need those original 10. And then we need to read them back each day, or we can even record it into our phones and listen to them back feel about them, see them in our mind's eye, and we're actually changing our neural pathways and we're actually rewiring. So that's the first really big step, is to let's shed our toxic dating stories. Let's leave them in the path where they belong. And that's a really powerful place to start. And then we get into the other core tenets of what it means to change our relationships and become secure. And the next big piece is learning to meet our own needs. So oftentimes what happens is we attract people who are unavailable because we are unavailable to ourselves. In other words, our subconscious mind, which is the one really running the show, wants to have a zone of familiarity because it equates familiarity to safety and thus survival. So what happens is we end up being really attracted to people who are familiar. And usually the most familiar is people who treat us the way we treat ourselves. And so a huge part of healing and becoming secure means learning, what are my big needs and how can I actually show up to pour into those needs in myself? And now I'm not just rewiring my ability to self-soothe, because so much of self-soothing is about needs meeting, but I'm also making myself emotionally available to receive these needs from others and to be attracted to people who will bring them to me in my life. Because my subconscious will, again, be attracted to people who treat me how I treat myself. So what we do is, you know, for the anxious preoccupied, for example, the big core needs are to feel validation, encouragement, certainty, a sense of control, but like self-control sort of dynamics. And that comes through a lot of certainty to begin with. They like to feel reassured. They like to feel important and prioritized. And they like to feel a deep sense of connection. And so that becomes, hey, how do I give that to myself, right? How do I connect to myself through journaling or meditation? How do I maybe validate and encourage myself more often through, you know, doing some reprogramming on not good enough, or, you know, or just have, you know, acknowledging my daily wins, for example, and making a habit out of that. How do I make myself a priority? Make sure I make time for the things that are important to me in my life instead of putting everybody else first and myself last. So we start by meeting those needs in relationship to self. If somebody's dismissive avoidant, they tend to need a sense of emotional safety in relationships, acknowledgement, appreciation, freedom, independence, autonomy. They need to know that those things are going to be valued and prioritized. And they actually really care about feeling supported and empathized with. And fearful avoidants generally tend to need a sense of deep connection, freedom, autonomy, safety, trust, as like an exceptionally high need, not just a typical baseline of trust that everybody needs in relationships. And they also need a lot of depth, novelty, and growth. So once we know those needs for each attachment style, we can start meeting them in the relationship to self. As we do that, we are actually rewiring our ability to self-soothe and feel good on our own in a healthy way. And then the third pillar becomes, I have to go communicate these needs to people in my life so they actually know what they are for me and they can start meeting them. And I have to learn to ask for those things and practice actively receiving them. Because sometimes we say, yeah, I need reassurance. And then when somebody reassures us, we're like, oh, I'm fine, but we're not. Or we say, oh, we need validation. And somebody compliments us and we're like, oh, you don't mean it. So we have to actually practice receiving at the same time. And then the fourth major pillar that's basically left is we have to learn to get better at our boundaries, you know, saying our true yeses and nos, being really truthful and honest in relationships so people can really know who we are, really know what's okay for us and what's not. And we stay in a state of security and out of people-pleasing and self-abandonment when we people-please by having healthy boundaries. So we can really dial in the reprogramming of those old toxic dating stories, learning to meet our own needs and communicate them to others, and learning to have healthy boundaries. This is what secure people have that we can actually move towards. And if we practice this with repetition, we actually rewire to become securely attached.
I love it. It's a great outline. I have a question. It's a big thing, but this line between meeting our own needs and having a partner who can meet us there, and having realistic expectations within that, right? Because it's like, it's going to be important to meet our own needs, but we also want a partner who shows up for us. And what are some questions we can ask ourselves if we're feeling like, you know, my partner is not reaching out as much as I would like them. I feel like I'm the one that always has to reach out. But our negativity bias could be at play, you know, and we're not seeing it clearly. And maybe we communicate to our partner, which would be important. Hey, it makes me feel really good when you check in, but how much am I expecting them to check in? You know, so like this line between what we want and what feels like a need and having realistic expectations.
Yeah, it's such an amazing question. And it's like, it's a powerful conversation to have. So the first part is that you mentioned the word negativity bias. A lot of our negativity bias comes from our core wounds, our pre-existing wounds, right? So if I have this abandonment wound and not good enough wound, I'm more likely to have a certain degree of negativity bias. And then my, you know, being hypervigilant a little bit about how much somebody's reaching out may actually be rooted in fear rather than truth. So the first part is we want to do some of that core wound reprogramming so that we can start seeing what like our truth is, how much we actually need somebody to reach out. Then we want to look at when somebody's reaching out, is there a need that it represents? Is it for a sense of certainty? Maybe it's for a sense of connection. And how am I doing at meeting those needs in relationship to self? Now, healthy interdependency requires being a master at both sides of relationship. Relationship to self, I can meet my own needs. I can self-soothe. I can make sure that I'm working through any negativity or stories in my life, but I can equally trust and rely on other people to be able to meet my needs as well. And I feel comfortable communicating and receiving. And healthy interdependency, when we have mastery of both, what happens is if somebody can't meet a need, because let's say, for example, my husband is going through a difficult time, okay, maybe work, change jobs, you know, whatever might be going on in somebody's difficult time, you know, I may want to rely on him more during that time, but I might realize, you know what, I'm going to do a little more meeting of my own needs during this time. And I'm going to be more of a support for him because I see that there's some challenges here. Now in a codependent relationship or a relationship lacking interdependency, where it's too one-sided or nobody wants to meet each other's needs, it can be counter-dependent as well as codependent. We see that like anytime the balance mechanics change, it tends to create resentment and conflict. But when we're really interdependent, we can start by pivoting and adapting. And that can be a really important place to be coming from. Mastery of both equals, you know, I can meet my needs and rely on you, but we can also adapt to different challenges or places in time. But the last part that is probably the most important is, let's say I'm doing my core wound reprogramming, takes about 21 days. Then let's say I'm getting really good at self-soothing and meeting my own needs. But what if, you know, this is a situation where literally I am the one always reaching out, you know, then I would feel, without the toxic dating stories and the fears, I would feel empowered. And this is what secure people do, to go to my partner and be like, hey, I really value our relationship dynamic. I really like where this is going. And something I need sometimes in the relationship is for you to initiate more often. You know, I feel like I really put in an effort to do that, but I would like for you to meet me halfway. That's something I'm looking for in a relationship. That's something that's meaningful to me. Can we work on that? And in secure relationships, people rise to that occasion all the time, and they're not perfect at it. You know, not everybody shows up in the perfect way, but we can fine tune. And if we don't do that, you know what often happens instead? Is we hold it in, we hold it in, we hold it in. And 3 months in, we're like, you never reach out to me. You never text enough. And we communicate in the negative form instead of saying what we need in the positive form. I need you to reach out. I really value our connection. Or versus, you never reach out enough. You don't care about me. Or, hey, I miss you. I want us to spend more quality time together. Can we book a date night? Can we plan a fun date this weekend? Versus, you never want to spend time with me. You don't care about the relationship. So by doing that, we honor ourselves and we honor the relationship, and we're being honest with what we are needing from a partner. And that's how a relationship ultimately is going to work, because we get to show and share our true selves. And we want to be with somebody who, when we do that, we can vet and make sure they're going to show up for our true self as well. That's how we ultimately become fulfilled.
Before we continue on, we're going to take a short break to tell you about our sponsors. When you work full-time, have kids, and run a podcast, it's hard to make time for a multiple-step skincare protocol. That's why I'm excited to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. Let me repeat it. They make it easy. No complicated routine, just simple, scientifically validated solutions. If you're looking for skincare products that are simple and effective, for a limited time, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your first OneSkin purchase when using the code IDO when you check out at oneskin.co. I've been using OneSkin's body lotion for about a month, and I've already seen noticeable improvements with small wrinkles and textures on my skin, specifically on the back of my neck and the back of my hands, two places where I get a lot of sun. Plus, my skin looks and feels healthier all around. It's all thanks to OneSkin's revolutionary OS-01 peptide, the first ingredient proven to deactivate aging cells responsible for lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin. Unlike traditional skincare products that only mask symptoms, OneSkin pioneered a new approach, integrating tissue engineering and cutting-edge science to enhance skin biology for lasting resilience against aging. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using the code IDO at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with the code IDO. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support your show and tell them we sent you. You all know I made the switch to Athena razors a few months ago, and I've been loving it. But unfortunately, I forgot my Athena razor over the winter holidays and had to resort to buying a drugstore brand razor. And I can say with confidence, I will never forget my Athena razor again. Revisiting a generic razor left my skin dry and prickly and left me feeling distracted and bothered by irritation. Now that I'm reunited with my Athena razor, I'm back to enjoying a consistently quality shave. I don't think I've ever had a multitasking razor, but this one moisturizes while you shave with avocado oil and hyaluronic acid serum. Plus, it has a built-in skin guards to help prevent razor burn. Like me, I know many of you try to make your home a reflection of how you hope to feel. So for this reason, I love that Athena helps me make my bathroom more organized with their thoughtful storage design that leads to an overall feeling of calm and rejuvenation. The razor kit comes with a game-changing magnetic hook in the razor kit for easy storage. This means no sitting your razor on the edge of your tub, no more goopy blades, and no more razors falling down your shower floor in the middle of the night. Plus, I have to mention that the Athena Club Razor Kit is an absolute steal at just $10. But don't let this price fool you. This razor packs a serious punch. It comes with a beautifully made ergonomic handle and two super sharp razor heads that deliver an incredibly smooth shave every time. Products like the Athena Club Razor Kit really go the extra mile to help you feel at home and confident in your skin. Ready to upgrade your shaving experience? Switch to the best razor on the market and show your skin you care with Athena Club. Head over to athenaclub.com to try their award-winning razor and body products and get 20% off your purchase with code IDO at checkout. You can also find Athena Club razors at your local Target store. Trust me, you won't look back. Happy shaving.
I love that. And just to make a note, you said that we need to understand that no relationship is perfect. Like, we can communicate these things and our partner can want to do it, but they're not going to do it perfectly for us. And that's something that I've tried to unpack within, you know, the things I'm working on, this anxious attachment, and realizing, you know, I can communicate my needs and also having some perspective that they're not perfect and they're their own person and they're figuring it out. And I think the awareness is important around that. And I still do questions, not the maybe the word, but it's an interesting thing to try to navigate, like this area of feeling like I want to have this need met, but having a realistic expectation for how my partner is or is not meeting it.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to have good standards. Like, I think that it's important to not just say, oh, my partner's not going to be perfect, and so they're not really trying and it's fine. You know, we should see the needle move, right? We should be making sure that we're vetting to ensure that that person is showing up. They're making the effort. I'll share a personal example. So I've been with my husband now for about 9 years. And he was more dismissive avoidant and I was fearful avoidant when we met. We'd both been doing some prior work, so we had like a degree of security, but you know, there was that element there. And one thing that drove me nuts, I'm going to be honest about him early on, it was like this like bone I had to pick, is that sometimes I would come home from work and I'd be like, hey, how was your day? And he wouldn't be present. He would be like doing something and be like, oh, it's good, and not there. And so I was like, okay, this does not feel good for me as somebody who really values like presence and depth of connection. And so I would ask him, I would be like, hey, when I come home, if you're in the middle of doing something, say, hey, I'm in the middle of doing something, but when you get a chance, come be present, right? Come leave what you're doing, be present for 5-10 minutes. Let's have a chat or a discussion and just, you know, be connected in that sense. And I told him also how it made me feel. I was like, it feels like I'm not very important to you when that's my experience when I come home. And, you know, my expectation was never that he was going to be perfect at it, but that I would see momentum and progress. And when he wasn't, so he actually really put a lot of effort in. I have to give him a ton of credit, like showed up 10 out of 10 well, really made all these efforts and really worked on that. But there were also times where like, he's really busy. There's all this stuff happening. And he would go back to, you know, not being present. And I would just say, hey, you're doing the thing where you're not being present right now. I need you to be present when you can be. And I would just see my need through in a gentle and supportive way where I'm not like, you know, disowning that I still have that need. I'm not like, oh, it's fine. I'm going to just park it and pretend it doesn't matter, because it did matter to me. But I was willing to be flexible. So it was on a time where it was okay for him. It wasn't like right now, stop what you're doing. And I was willing to communicate in the positive, right? Like I was able to say, if not, you never do this, but hey, can you be present? Can you come back? So I think there's this balance where we want to be able to like actually share what we need, never dismiss it or say it's fine. It's not that big of a deal. We need to see that momentum and growth. But in the times that it doesn't happen, we just need to gently remind the person, hey, can we do a little more of this in the relationship? And as long as that communication is there, all the problems that are there often become solvable if both people are willing to show up that way.
I love that. Thank you for that personal story. And I just thought of a thing that continues to help me along these lines is when I start telling a story of what my partner's doing or not doing, a couple things. One is writing down, and you alluded to this earlier with a different exercise kind of, but like writing down what the reality is as objectively as possible. So I could be, you know, to go with this communication thing, oh, my partner hasn't reached out in a day. And the wounded part of me would say, oh, they don't care, the abandonment, you know, they're not thinking about me, this and that. But then taking the time to write down something like, well, they do reach out quite often, and here's the evidence, and also I'm safe and I'm okay, you know, kind of speaking to that inner child, and my partner does love and care for me. But like something about writing it out to combat that sort of unconscious, automatic, negative response is super valuable.
Absolutely. I 100%, because when you write it out, you're actually feeling about it. You're imagining it. So you're actually speaking. It's this form of self-soothing that speaks to the subconscious mind, which is really powerful, right? And you could argue even speaks to the unconscious mind in a certain sense as well. And so that's really meaningful. And then it's always a match with standards, right? So I give this tool where it's called an emotional processing sheet. And what I get people to do is actually, step one is like write out all the meaning you're giving to a situation that's triggering you. Because it's never the situation, right? A dismissive avoidant, for example, could be in a relationship with somebody and somebody doesn't call them back for a few hours. And they're like, oh, I don't have to talk on the phone. Like they're happy. But maybe somebody who's more anxious is like, oh my gosh, where are they? Right. And they're triggered. So it's never the objective situation. It's the meaning we give. So step one, what's the meaning you're giving to the situation? And you can write out all your stories. Step two is we actually take those stories and we say, could it be anything other than this? So they didn't call me back. The meaning I give is they don't care about me. Could it be something other than this? They're busy. They're distracted. They don't like to talk on the phone, you know, so that helps to equilibrate, like balance out the story. And then is there something opposite to this, right? Do they actually care to reach out? Do they actually care about me? What evidence do I have? And this is very soothing. But then the next step is we have to say, what do I need to feel relief? Because it's not just us self-soothing by changing the perception and equilibrating the old stories, it's also us standing up for our needs. So that's where it becomes, well, I need my partner to maybe reach out more, you know? And if my partner doesn't reach out in 5 hours, maybe I say, you know what? That's probably healthy. You know, securely attached people often will have a couple exchanges per day, see each other 2 to 3 times a week. And that's a healthy amount of balance. But if maybe my partner hasn't reached out for a full day, maybe we kind of went outside of my standards. I'm just saying this as an example, right? But maybe 24 hours, if I'm in a committed relationship, that doesn't really land well with me. So maybe what I need is to actually go have a conversation with this person and say, hey, look, this is the baseline of like what I would like to see in a relationship. I really want us to work towards that. And how do you feel about that? And sometimes we get scared to have the conversations because we're like, oh no, I'll be too much and they'll abandon me. But the reality is like, how does the relationship make you feel, right? And if you're not having those conversations, so being able to then go into step four, what do I need? And then what's my strategy step five to get that need met? That allows us to go out and not be carrying our stories that are making that negative bias, but also look out for our truth as a human being and show up honestly in the relationship to say, hey, you know, 24 hours might be too long if that was the case in the dynamic. And again, that's going to be dependent on somebody's standards, right? Somebody may be like 20, I can go 3 days without speaking to somebody and be fine. But that's where we attune, we check in with our needs, and then we communicate them accordingly.
I love it. And yeah, going back to, it's a specific example from my relationship that I do like to check in. It's a long distance. She lives 5 hours away. And so I feel like there's another element of liking a not super steady stream, but as you said, you know, a couple times a day. And there is an element of like hearing her voice, or we FaceTime, and you know, she leans towards more fearful, avoidant. And not to say we're in any kind of conflict necessarily when this is going on. It's just she doesn't need as many contact points. And when I've said, hey, I really love like when we FaceTime, she's responsive to that, but I do have to initiate it. And again, not every time, but then there's a part of me that will be like, well, I feel like I don't want to initiate it as much as I do. And it's like, I kind of go back to, well, what do I need to feel relief? Like you said, and sometimes that's just like, I'll say, hey, I'd love to talk right now. And 99% of the time she's like, yeah, sure. Awesome. I'd love to. You know, but it's more responsive. And even that I've noticed will make me feel, it makes me feel better. But there is a narrative that I can create where it's like, what does that mean that she's not wanting to do that? But I realize that that's my wound speaking.
Also, this might surprise you. I was fearful avoidant. I said this earlier, but I was in a long distance relationship. And this is the part that might surprise you. It was a fairly serious one years and years ago. And I would purposely, when I was fearful, would never reach out first because I felt like it was too vulnerable. And I felt like, you know, and you know what? I can actually look back on those times and remember hurting that I really wanted to connect, but it was too scary to reach out. And if somebody came to me and said, hey, like, I want you to reach out more, it matters to me, it would have given me permission to be like, oh, okay. Like if that person can be so vulnerable to say that, like, it's okay for me to do that. And I had this weird thing in my head as someone who had never done work at that point in my life of like, oh, I'm the girl and I'm not supposed to reach out ever and all these things. But really it was my own fear of being vulnerable and of being open. And ultimately I had a lot of work to do at that time in my life. But you know, if you were to go to her, I think sometimes we can be afraid of like initiating, even saying, oh, hey, I want you to reach out sometimes too. But like, it can give permission to somebody to open and to realize that, hey, that's okay for them to do, because you don't know how much she might actually be wanting to do those things. This is very common for fearful avoidance too, by the way. It's not just my story. I've seen this a lot through client practice. But when you get to share your truth and say like, hey, I also need to know that you're initiating sometimes, you know, I need that as well. That just having that conversation and then, you know, maybe a reminder once a month, if it sort of trails off for a little bit, can actually be a really meaningful way to grow the relationship where you're opening up more and more with who you truly are and what you truly want. And doing that kind of stuff is the only way we actually get out of the power struggle stage eventually in relationships.
Thank you for sharing that personal story. And yeah, I do know she shared and I picked up on it that was more of her attachment style. And I have said, you know, because I'll ask at the end of a day, you know, hey, how was your day? And She's like, it's good. And then I'm like, I can tell there's more. And then she kind of unloads about how stressed or overwhelmed she was with work. And I'm like, hey, you know, you can share that. It's safe. I want to hear. And then she'll share like, yeah, you know, she's not used to that, you know, that's her wound. And that's the beauty of relationships, is we can heal through that and through that safe space. So
exactly, which is really, really beautiful. I love hearing stuff like that. It's really nice. And it's nice that you're giving her that ability to like share and open up and communicate about her day and her experiences.
Amazing, Thais. Well, I think we covered a lot today, and I really appreciate being able to have my personal little session with you and for you sharing your knowledge and personal stories. Thank you so much. Before we wrap up, can you tell our listeners where they can find you online? If there's anything that you want to emphasize or maybe we skipped over, and then we'll say goodbye.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is I have a free attachment style quiz that gives everybody a report on their core wounds, their needs. I heard you mention the quizzes earlier.
Yes.
And so it gives you a full report and it tells you about them, like core wounds that you'll have, your needs, your issues with boundaries. It gives you like a sort of report of where to start in terms of healing your attachment style from like a subconscious reprogramming point of view. So that's at personaldevelopmentschool.com. People can go there, or I have daily YouTube videos on Personal Development School dash Thais Gibson. And also just wanted to say thank you so much for your vulnerability. It was really nice to chat in kind of a different way. I've been on a lot of podcasts lately, and just to talk about your story and some of the dynamics and move through it that way, I always really appreciate and enjoy. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And we'll have those links in our show notes and on our website. And thanks for taking the time to come on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into today's episode. As always, all the links to the guest, as well as any of their recommendations, will be in the show notes page. You can find the link to that in the episode description or by going to idopodcast.com. Click on the podcast tab up at the top and you will have access to all the episodes that we've ever done. There are over 300 of them. And while you're on our website, if you haven't checked out our free 14-day happy couple challenge, we really hope you do. It's a free email challenge that we send to you. It's 14 days of fun, easy, doable challenges to help strengthen and improve your relationship. And if you're looking for something that provides a little more help with working on your relationship, whether it's improving intimacy or communication with your partner, or just bringing the spark back, we would love for you guys to check out our online course, Spark My Relationship. We're offering $100 off to all of our listeners if you go to sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. We've worked with over 15 psychologists and therapists to create the real life tools and strategies that they are teaching their clients. So we wanted to give them to you. It's a self-paced online course that can be done in as little as a month or up to 3 months. You can really decide how much or how little you want to do with your partner, or maybe just yourself. So we hope you guys check that out. It's sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. Have a great day.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.